time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
I'm even for a week going to say Lafayette's a big enough city that you actually have a West. You actually have a West Lafayette. That's how humiliated, humbled, just begging for help. I'm begging for forgiveness.
Russ Dellinger.
Man, offensively, they can't seem to get it going consistently. It's hard. It's hard watching them offensively.
And SI's Pat Forte.
He's incredible. He really is. He is too fast to cover and too physical to tackle when you do catch him. I mean, he's just an unbelievable athlete.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
All right, welcome to the pod. Overreaction. Not a real overreaction. Somebody cover Brock Bowers. We're going to get to Georgia, escaping the plains. SEC is fascinating. USC's defense. Red River set up. A big weekend set up for next weekend. This could have been a wild one. It wasn't quite. It was a very entertaining day. But it does set up a lot of big matchups next week. So that part's cool. It's just one of those kind of interesting days. I think we should start with Notre Dame, though.
Yes.
Second consecutive.
Yes.
Wild, wild game and victory last minute. They defeat Duke 21-14, come back from 14-13. Audric Estime with a brilliant 30-yard TD run with 31 seconds left. Sam Hartman showed up in that final drive. I was with some guys watching the game. We're like, is this one, like, Sam Hartman's got to show he is something with this, you know, like, this is when you got to win a game. And he went out and won a game, huge fourth and 16 scramble. Could have been a huge night for Duke. Wasn't Lou Holtz managed to not insult anybody, so that was positive. A lot going on.
Success.
Good night for the Irish. Week after the heartbreak, they passed all colors. Pat, thoughts on Notre Dame and Duke?
Yeah, what a game. And so many similarities, I thought, to the end of the Ohio State game, just mostly in reverse, where Notre Dame, you could argue, gave it away last week against the Buckeyes, and then they took it back against the Blue Devils. Duke's playing an inspired game at home. And I tell you, I don't want to veer too far off course here, but like, why can't Billy Napier in his second year get Florida to play as hard as Duke is playing for Mike Elko? That's my question.
We'll get to that.
Yeah, we will. But you know, Duke did everything but win that game. And at the time, I liked the quick kick that they did on fourth and six from, like, the Notre Dame 35. You couldn't trust their kicker. That was not going to be an option to try a field goal. So you could go for it, or you could kick it down and get them inside the 10-yard line and say, look, my defense has played great all game. We've held them to one touchdown. We've held them to 13 points. We're going to win it with our defense. And they did until that fourth and 16. And then Sam Hartman, yeah, with an incredible scramble. I'm not sure where all the Duke defenders were, but huge clutch play there. And then Estime finishes it off. They don't even need a field goal. So, just the sharp turnaround of emotions. Man, Marcus Freeman this morning must just be, like, wiped out. You got to be exhausted mentally and emotionally from those two games. You know, I thought Duke showed a lot, but Notre Dame showed a little bit more in winning the game. And now, I mean, Notre Dame's got big games all over the schedule still. This is very interesting what they've got coming up.
It can't be exhausted. They're at Louisville, and then they get USC. That's the next 2 weeks. So no time for the exhausted. Ross, get to watch it much was, of this. I know you were at a wedding getting hammered.
Yeah, I was in New Orleans I was in a New Orleans wedding. My best friend was married. We were in at a antebellum home in Treme, and we did have a TV though, right?
Okay.
We had a TV, and we did have a bunch of phones out on the table, as is the case often with fall weddings. So we were able to watch some of the games. I did watch the end of this one. It is crazy to think about, you know. Last week, you're in a lot of ways, your heart kind of broke for Notre Dame the way that game ended, and then this week, your heart kind of breaks for Duke, in the way that game ended. But Pat's right. You know, even though they lost, I mean, Mike Elko's got that group playing incredibly well defensively, and then Riley Leonard on offense. They're fun to watch. And, you know, I mean, the season's not over yet for them. So they've got a chance to still do some things and maybe even get into that ACC title game.
Well, a lot will depend on Riley Leonard's leg.
Yeah.
The way that ended.
Yeah.
Yeah. Brutal way to end.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought the Pooch punt was interesting. I thought actually probably if Elko is sitting around, the call they want back is at 4th and 16. They were getting home with the blitz.
Yeah.
He only rushes 3, and then I don't know. He got 8 guys back, and none of them are within 16 yards of the line of scrimmage. So, you know, just as close could get. But that Duke team is playing really, really well, and it's a good program. But Notre Dame, they're going to be really interesting the rest of the season. They got Louisville, they got USC, they still got Clemson later in the year. I think they're going to need some help, probably playoff wise. Like, you know, Ohio State's got that victory over them, so. You know, can they still get in? They're not out of it at all, but 2 wild, exciting weeks for the Fighting Irish. All right, let's talk Georgia. Needed a big comeback. Trailed 17-10 most of the third quarter at Auburn. Great environment. This is not a great Auburn team, as we've seen all season. The defense was strong. It was really 2 turnovers that let Auburn stay in this game. Peyton Thorne, Auburn's QB, only had 82 yards passing. There was just virtually nothing. But when the game was on the line, Georgia made plays. Carson Beck got a lot better in his second half, mainly because he kept throwing it to Brock Bowers. 8 catches, 157, a brilliant 40-yard touchdown catch and run with just under 3 minutes left in regulation. So, you know, there's 2 schools of thought here. It's Georgia. This ain't the Georgia last 2 years. They're not dominant. They're not this, that. This is why it's hard to win 3 in a row, or almost impossible, right? The Minnesota teams of the 30s, that was it. I mean, don't know what to count that. Or it's, you know what? They're winning. Winning on the road. So, I don't know. Ross, what do you think about this?
Yeah, all the groomsmen were gathered in the carriage house of this antebellum home, watching this game final few minutes as we were about to begin the wedding. And the wedding began with about 5 minutes left in a tied Georgia Auburn game, and so we had to leave the room and leave the TV. But one of the groomsmen did bring his phone, so while up out on the wedding stage, he flashed me the score, the final score, as like the bride and groom were like, you know, right next to me. So typical fall weddings in the South kind of thing. But I got to watch the final minutes of this. Yeah, man, give it up. Auburn's defense played incredibly well. And I haven't been sold on Georgia offensively. It's why I ended up picking Auburn to cover, and I thought they might like pull some crazy upset. It was the one game of the day that I thought that, you know, might have a crazy upset and field storming and all that stuff. And they almost did it, and they almost did it without much of an offense at all. They just really, really struggle. And yeah, if they could have slowed Brock Bowers a little more, maybe they would have won. 8 catches, 157 yards and a touchdown. And I did get to see the clip, the back-to-back plays where he caught a pass one-handed. Now, one of them didn't count. I think it was a penalty. But yeah, he caught back-to-back on back-to-back plays, caught balls one-handed. Like, just what a freak.
He's incredible. He really is. He is too fast to cover and too physical to tackle when you do catch him. I mean, he's unbelievable athlete. I mean, he's not 6'7". He doesn't tower over people. He's probably 6'4", but he is really fast, and he's got great hands, and he breaks tackles. I mean, the ultimate combination: runs routes, doesn't drop the ball. He's a perfect tight end, and boy, do they need him in that offense, because the running game is just kind of iffy. And Carson Beck has really been kept under wraps, I think, much of this season. I think they're finally starting to let him out a little bit more and throw the ball down the field. And I thought he responded well to the situation in the second half of that game. But Georgia's two SEC games so far, they've trailed more than they've led against South Carolina and against Auburn, not against elite-level teams. Against South Carolina and Auburn, they have trailed more than they have led. And they gave up 215 rushing yards to Auburn. That's, I was just looking it up, the most in 5 years. October 13th, 2018, LSU hit them for 275. So that is very un-Georgia-like, to give up 215 rushing yards. So they've got things to address, and they've got a tough game coming up with Kentucky coming to Athens.
Yeah, Ray Davis just ran for 280 yards against
Florida.
One quick thing, I remember Kirby Smart saying this at SEC Media Day about Brock Bowers. He told this story. They were doing this drill where you and somebody, generally it's you and somebody else, you run laps around the field, but you sprint the sidelines and then you rest, you kind of jog the end zone, mm-hmm. and then you sprint up the other and you go around and around, and it's kind of a competition. He said they had two freshmen try to team up and beat Brock. Brock wins every time. Yeah. So they teamed up and they had two guys against one. So Brock would sprint against somebody and then they'd jog, and then there'd be another guy waiting who had rested up to sprint against Brock, and then they jog. And Brock Bowers was winning anyway.
Yeah, one every time.
One every time.
It's a great anecdote.
Kirby's like, I never seen a, yeah, you know. That's how good this guy is. You can't give the Heisman to a tight end, but my goodness.
Yeah.
I'm not saying you should. I'm not saying that, but it's about as close as you can get to giving a Heisman to a tight end. All right, this Kentucky team, 5-0. They absolutely crush Florida. As we said, Davis, unbelievable. 280 yards, three touchdowns. I mean, Devin Leary was only 9 of 20 for 69 yards, and they won 33-14. Kentucky's pretty good. This is going to be a very interesting game against Georgia. On the flip side, Florida, whatever good was going after the Tennessee victory, that's out the window. They're 3-2. We're going to get to a whole bunch of SEC misery. But, Pat, your thoughts here?
Yeah, man. I mean, I will say that Mark Stoops has found more ways to win games at Kentucky. The dude is a hell of a coach. They can win games where they throw for 69 yards. They can win games where they can't run. They can win shootouts. They can win slogs. They win games where they get behind and come back. They win games where they get ahead and nearly lose leads. I mean, that guy has just done a remarkable job finding ways to win with what he's got. And Ray Davis, whoa, what a talent. He's had a great year. He was having a great year before this game. Vanderbilt transfer from San Francisco. And he can catch the ball and do damage there, but he just gouged Florida. I think he had over 200 in the first half. Good Lord. I mean, he could have been on his way to 400. So, super impressive effort from Kentucky. And, you know, yeah, they were Devin Leary was it, and Ray Davis. Those were two big transfer portal pickups, and they've done well in the portal historically the last few years. But Leary so far has just been kind of your classic game manager. They haven't needed him necessarily to be more than that, but he's had some very good games in his history going back to at North Carolina State. So I'll tell you what, Georgia had better be ready. Georgia has absolutely had Kentucky's number under Kirby Smart, and really historically Georgia has almost always had Kentucky's number, but this is not same old Kentucky. For Kentucky to beat Florida 3 years in a row and dominate them this time, I don't think that's ever happened. And boy, I bet the Florida fans are just delighted about that.
Yeah. Well, especially, man, offensively, they can't seem to get it going consistently. It's hard. It's hard watching them offensively. And you know, Billy Napier is an offensive coach. I believe he calls the plays. And so that's something that's certainly going to have to get fixed. And, you know, I know that you might point to, hey, it's year two and they need to stock the talent. And, you know, Billy Napier is a long year play, a long time, kind of long term kind of play and building the team up and stacking recruiting classes. But as Pat said earlier, when you have the turnarounds that we're seeing in college football, a lot of it through the, you know, using the portal. At Colorado, you know, at Duke, really these quick kind of turnarounds. It's hard to use these excuses with Florida. Ray Davis is incredible. I think, Pat, it was 9 minutes left in the second quarter, and he had broken 200 yards. Woo! It's just incredible. And Kentucky's previous four opponents, Vanderbilt, Arkansas, Eastern Kentucky, Ball State, Ray Davis didn't have more than 112 yards in any of them. It was held under 100 in a few. Now, a lot of times he didn't have a whole lot of carries in these games that were blowouts and such. But for him to put up that against Florida, man, just incredible. Vanderbilt transfer, right? Came out of the portal from Vandy.
You know, Napier went and got Graham Mertz from Wisconsin in the portal to be the QB, and they were talking him up and excited about him. He's 25 for 30 yesterday, but 244. It's not that he's bad, but there's not a lot of, I don't know, there's just something wrong. They couldn't run the ball. That didn't help, but the defense got gashed. There's a lot of different stuff going on there. They're definitely have a season on the brink here. Same with the SEC West.
Who?
LSU was up. Oh, now they're down. Lose 55-49 to Ole Miss. Ole Miss was up. Then they were down after the Bama loss. Now they're back up. Alabama was down after Texas. Now they're up. Texas A&M was down. Now they're up. But A&M and Alabama are going to play. Mississippi State, Auburn, and Arkansas, thanks for playing. But they all are good enough to... There was all this talk of the... SEC West gobbling up the Red River teams, Oklahoma and Texas. They're all up. We're going to have a great Red River next week. But for this season, who's going to win the SEC West? Which one of these teams do you have faith in to win the SEC West, Ross?
We're the up and down of the SEC West and maybe the SEC in general is indicative or, you know, microcosm of all of college sports. We've seen, we just discussed it with Notre Dame, right? Like it's hard to pinpoint a team or even a group of teams maybe right now that's like, oh, these teams are far and away better. And, you know, we haven't had that in a while. I mean, the last decade or so, it's a lot of times been either an Alabama, either a Clemson, either an Ohio State, all three. And we just don't have that this year. It doesn't feel like some people might say a Florida State or Texas, but I don't know. They haven't been incredibly dominant, and those are new teams that we're seeing kind of in the mix this year. Yeah, this year's more open than it seems like any other on the national stage, but also on the SEC West. Right, for the first time in a long time. You know, we're more than a month in and can't point the finger at, okay, this is the dominant team in the West, the team to beat. It's wild. Between Ole Miss, A&M, Alabama, and LSU, what they all have, A&M doesn't have an SEC loss, do they?
So neither does Alabama.
Neither does Alabama, loss, right.
Yet.
Right. Yeah, Alabama too. And they meet, right? Don't they play this weekend?
This week.
Or yeah, next
week.
Weekend.
Big game.
Yeah.
Big game.
Yeah, so big game in College Station. And, you know, the winner of that game obviously gets the lead. I'm still saying that Alabama is the team. You know, before the season, I did pick LSU to win the West. That took a hit on Saturday. But now it does feel like, you know, this Alabama team, maybe they're getting it together a little bit. And, man, Nick Saban I watched a little bit of the Mississippi State Alabama game and the first half. Man, it was like the old Saban out there. He was throwing the headset and yelling at people. And, you know, you almost see the steam coming out of the ears sort of thing. So he's fired up. And the tide's back to rolling a little bit. So I would say Alabama. But, man, it's crazy right now in that league.
Yeah, I think in times of uncertainty you default to Alabama, and I know I've been throwing as much dirt on their grave as anybody has, but just given what I've seen, I thought LSU would win the SEC West as well, and holy moly, what is wrong with that defense? Good gravy. Awful. Gave up 700 yards to Ole Miss. Anyway,
most ever, I think, right, by an LSU defense. I believe has to be.
I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that game, but, you know, at least Alabama does some things that you can rely on. They play good defense, for starters. They can run the ball. Jalen Milroe, been up and down, but he's performing pretty well right now, right? And so I think you take those things and figure they're just going to keep building on it and getting a little bit better and a little bit better. And right now I would take them. But, man, their schedule, not easy. Obviously, they got at A&M, mm-hmm. home against Arkansas, then Tennessee, LSU back-to-back, and then Kentucky at Kentucky after that. You know, that LSU game is usually such a slobber knocker, although the way LSU's playing touch football right now, so maybe not. But that's usually a game you come out a little bit sore, and all of a sudden you got to go play a Kentucky team that can knock face masks with you, too. So they've got a lot of work to do still.
And the Iron Bowl's at Auburn, too.
And the Iron Bowl is at Auburn.
We just see how Auburn played, you know.
706 yards they gave up.
Incredible.
Yeah. I mean, they gave up in every imaginable way. Jackson Dart, 389, 4 TDs. Trey Harris had 153 yards receiving. Jordan Watkins had 103. Two guys with over 100. And then Quinshon Judkins, 177 yards on 33 yards. Like, just workhorse running. Like, they did everything they wanted. Yeah. LSU is hugely disappointing. I predicted them to win the West. I predicted them to make the playoff. I predicted Jaden Daniels as the Heisman Trophy winner. Jaden Daniels yesterday, 27 of 36, 414 yards, 4 touchdowns, no interceptions. He then rushes 15 times for 99 yards and a touchdown, has a 55-yard run, and you're losing. You're wasting an incredible quarterback.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, maybe not Joe Burrow, but this is right there.
That is one hell of a college quarterback line right there.
Because you don't have anyone who can – you don't have a cornerback, a defensive backfield. Like, LSU always has –
DBU.
They've always got these guys. They couldn't guard anybody. Unbelievable. Brian Kelly needs to get some – like, he cannot drift.
Right.
Like, LSU.
He is in some. No. He is in. The seat may not be hot. They may not be ready to fire him or anything like that, but boy, he is setting himself up for next year to be really, really tense.
Yeah.
And this, look at this league and look at all of college football. Parity, some measure of parity is here. Mm. Whether it's the transfer portal, whether it's NIL, whether it's just happenstance, whether it's everyone's on TV and these guys aren't scared to find, it's probably a combination of all of it, like the portal. But you want to go in and try to get guys to the portal and you're coming off a bad season?
Yeah.
That's dangerous, right? Because everyone's going after the same guys. So this is a dicey spot. That was a bad loss. They should have won that. You get that out of the quarterback, you beat Ole Miss every single time. Yeah. And they made Jackson Dart. He's a very good player, but I mean, they made everybody on Ole Miss look great.
A brief addition on that game. One of the joys of the sport, you know, you're traveling around going, like, I was driving from Boulder back to Denver, and I was taking our friend Chuck Culpepper from the Washington Post back to his hotel, and then I was going to go to mine. Sirius Radio, we get the Ole Miss call of the game.
Yeah,
it's the first half, and it's so fun to listen to the home calls, you know, because the excitement level and the dejection and the anger and the inevitable. Well, it looked like everybody for LSU was holding on that play. They blocked Eldon Johnson right in the back.
Yell'em Kell'em. Isn't it Yell'em Kell'em? For the Ole Miss broadcast, I think the play-by-play man said Yell'em Kell'em.
Yeah, that's I don't know who it was. But
that's his nickname.
And then John Darnell was doing the halftime interview with Lane. And Lane's comment is like, you know, well, Coach, your thoughts on that half? It's like, a lot of good offense. A lot of bad defense. Okay, there we go. Good luck at halftime, Coach.
Yes, David Kell'em is the voice of the Rebels, and he is known in parts of Oxford as Yell'em Kell'em.
Yell'em Kell'em. Decades, so, right? He's been there like 40-plus years.
Yeah, he's been there a long time. Yeah, he's been there a long time. I visited Baton Rouge in maybe in August. I think it was mid-August or so, and I pulled a couple of their assistants to side and said, hey, just, you know, give me the lowdown here. Like, what are you most worried about? One thing kept coming up, defensive backfield. And boy, we saw it in the second half against Florida State, couldn't cover their receivers. And man, did we see it against Ole Miss as well.
I remember driving one time, the first time I ever heard, I was in somewhere in the Midwest driving, and I picked up a station out of Atlanta, and they had a Georgia game. This is 15, 20 years ago, and Larry Munson was doing the game. The legendary Larry Munson.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I mean, I remember listening going, what in the world is this?
We stepped on their face with a boot, whatever,
nail boot.
Yeah. All this different stuff. He was just incredible. So yeah, those are the fun parts. Pat, you were in Boulder. You mentioned wild game. As we suspected, Caleb Williams is going to sit back there and have a field day. And he did, 403 yards, 6 touchdowns, 30 of 40. He threw, 30 completions, 6 TDs. I don't know what the TD to completion ratio, if that's a stat now, but that's a pretty good one. Dominated, but they're up 41-14, and this thing is looking really bad. And Colorado, to their credit, does not quit, fights back. It ends up 48-41. They couldn't get the onside kick. They couldn't do this or that at the end. But, the defense of USC is just a huge, as we also thought, and why I think a lot of us picked Colorado to cover. This wasn't Oregon's defense.
No.
There was no hobnob boot or whatever. Can US, what was the scene like? I know there's a ton of celebs, all that. Is it still as festive as ever, even though they're now 3-2?
Oh yeah. I mean, it was a great scene. It really felt like if there has ever been such a thing as a mid-morning Las Vegas heavyweight boxing match. That's what it felt like, because everybody's down on the field and you're just watching. Okay, who's coming out next? Who's coming out next? Oh, there's Paul Pierce and Kevin Garnett. There's DaBaby, rapper who spoke to the team. Shockingly, I was not, super cognizant of who he was when he came out.
But you didn't know who DaBaby was, Pat? Come on, get it together.
Other people were very excited, and so I picked up on that. There was like 19 different arrays of celebrities would come out, some of them a little more famous than others. But it was just an incredible scene down there. And then tons of recruits, unbelievable number of recruits in for that game. And so, yeah, the pregame scene was fantastic. The crowd was excellent. USC did completely shred Colorado's defense as expected. But man, Shedeur Sanders did some slinging of his own. He played so well. He just continues to impress the heck out of me. And I will say, I was sitting next to Peter King, the legendary NFL reporter and an all-time great guy. We'll see what he writes off of this, but I have a feeling he's going to say how much he likes Shedeur Sanders, because he was really smitten with Sanders and the way he played, and, under so much more pressure and being, thrown off of out of the pocket more than Caleb Williams ever was. So, it was just and again, Deion afterwards, it was interesting. It was the first time I've seen him post game without his sunglasses on. And his eyes were kind of red. I suspect he had gotten a bit emotional in the locker room. And he said over and over again, I told my players how proud I am of them. And I really think that this game, while they did not win, and they were not the better team, like they never had a possession to tie the game, but the way they fought back and what they showed in that game, I think really did validate, like, it wasn't just some flash in the pan, fluky 3-0, and now we're gone. I think some people wondered if that was going to be the case after they got trampled by Oregon, but they rallied, they came back, they played reasonably well, especially considering they were down 3 starters in the secondary, including 2 stars in the secondary. So all systems go for Coach Prime. As he said, if you can't see what direction Colorado football is going, you're an idiot, basically, was what he said. It's obvious what's happening here, and I agree with him.
I think I was the only one in the pod that picked USC to cover, and as I was getting ready for the wedding dressed, I was checking the score, and it was 48-21. Before that, it was 41-14. I was feeling really good about things. And then, Jesus, I checked the score again, and all of a sudden,
it was an avalanche. So,
I know. It's crazy.
Can USC win with this defense?
No.
And why can't Lincoln Riley get a defense?
I don't know. He needs to get rid of Alex Grinch, in my opinion, who's the defensive coordinator. And even then, they may just be so wired for offense that it's not going to happen. But they can certainly do better than they have. And I'm sorry, but Oregon and Washington are going to go up and down the field on that defense too.
Yeah. And they've got better, much better defenses, right? Like Oregon and Washington both probably have. Certainly, Oregon doesn't. They put together a great defense, and it's the bugaboo that's been killing them the last several years. Even going all the way back to under Clay Helton, like that was the issue. They can't get a consistently good defense. You look at their schedule and. You know, we're 2 weeks away from them playing in South Bend. Yeah. And, you know, Notre Dame's defense is one of the better in the country. They're going to slow down Caleb Williams and crew a little bit, you would think. So, man, and then they've got Utah. They got Washington on the schedule. And as Pat mentioned, they got Oregon, too. I mean, it is tough. Given that defense, to see them going undefeated. It is.
It's going to be some tough sledding to go. Yeah. They have a stretch of at Notre Dame, Utah, at Cal, Washington at home, at Oregon, UCLA. Colorado, for its point, it has Arizona State and Stanford and a bye. They need to win those games. So they could get to 5-2. I don't know how many more than six they could possibly win this year. We thought if they got bowl eligible, it would be a crazy. I think a lot of us thought they'd be 1-4 right now. So there is definitely something going on there. It was an exciting comeback and all of that. All right, let's see. Red River, Texas took care of Kansas, tried to avenge that loss from a couple years ago. 661 yards, limited Kansas to just 260. They are 5-0 for the first time since 2009. Amazing.
That's crazy. That's unbelievable.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Oklahoma is 5-0. Again, they have been 5-0 recently. Crush Iowa State 50-20. Look, they went 6-7 last year. Is Brent Venables ready? Look, they're setting up a monster in Dallas next week. A monster game. It looks like both teams are all cylinders. Let's go. Any preliminary thoughts going into that clash?
Yeah, super excited. Oklahoma has been really high-octane offense. They have not played a very good schedule so far. But they were held down a little bit by Cincinnati and a little bit by SMU, but they've also racked up some big offensive performances. Texas' defense is good. You know, Texas has played well defensively. 24 is the most they've given up. That was to Alabama on the road. Kansas didn't have Jalen Daniels, which hurts, but their backup, Jason Bean's a really good player, too. I'm impressed by what Texas is doing with its defense. They're a pretty complete team right now. You know, they can run, they can throw, they can stop the run, they can stop the passing pretty well. So I'm impressed by what Texas is putting on the field. This will be a step up in class for Oklahoma, given the schedule they've played so far.
Yeah, I was looking at Oklahoma's schedule. Arkansas State, SMU, Tulsa, Cincinnati, Iowa State. Texas is certainly got the better resume, and I think does have the better team. But Brent Venables has Oklahoma playing really well, and I think a lot of people thought maybe after last season it's pretty disappointing under Venables that this was going to be some kind of drop off in Oklahoma football, but maybe not so fast. You know, Dylan Gabriel is playing pretty well, but they'll obviously get their biggest test in Dallas, and that's going to be an exciting one. I think it's the typical traditional 11 a.m. local kickoff at the fair, and although it's a Big 12 game, I believe Greg Sankey will be on hand to see his new teams play against each other.
Interesting. Well, I'll say this for Brent Venables. Those first five are meaningless if it doesn't go well on Saturday. There's nothing quite like watching, they split the crowd at the old Cotton Bowl. It's an old school stadium. It's not a bunch of luxury boxes and club seating. It is, I don't know if it's bleachers, but it's old. And when half that crowd has to shuffle out while the other half are cheering.
Yeah.
And they got to go
taunting.
Taunting. And then they got to go. And then the kid wants to spend like $500 on the rides and eat fried Oreo. It's an ugly scene. You do not want to lose that game. I've covered a few of them, and the relief. Remember Mac Brown being just relieved one time.
For sure.
Like the pressure buildup. And it's just like, oh, thank God I don't have. It's bad to lose to a rival. The cocktail party's the only other one like this, Georgia and Florida. But these two are always Georgia. I don't think Georgia's Florida's biggest rival. I don't think Florida's Georgia's. I don't know. Are they? It's not quite like this.
Right.
It's not quite like this. And yeah. When you got to watch your hated your hated rivals celebrate and all that crap, and then you got to shuffle out, and it's like 2 p.m. Like the day isn't even. You just.
Yeah.
It's hot Dallas.
It's hot
smell
as hell.
Of corn dogs and
right. And it's like you can't just get in your car and go. It's like a madhouse around the place.
Oh, yeah. And there are a lot of sloppy, sweaty drunks staggering around that state fair area. That's for sure.
That's pretty good. So,
one of the greatest those settings, right? Like the split crowd down the middle of the goalposts and then the fair going around. And then, of course, in that stadium. Right. It just kind of throws you back to like that's one of the oldest probably operating stadiums in the country. And they've done some things here and there, tweaked it. But I'm so thankful they haven't moved that game to the glamorous Jerry World.
Oh, please don't. Yeah. No, I am too.
Yeah.
No. Jerry World's a beautiful place, but it does not have that. Yeah, and you want them. You don't want air conditioning. That's the thing. Like, you don't have air conditioning. It's like this place. Yeah. Nobody wants to watch a game there. The only reason they're watching the game is because
so cramped.
Yeah, it's because it's Texas, Oklahoma. Like everyone would like to, you don't even like football. Be like, with the Jerry World, nice seats, good fog, got a nice Caesar salad. No, there's none of that.
No Caesar salads at
nice
the
little salad,
at the old
sushi roll.
Bowl.
I got a sushi roll. No,
you'll take your hot dog and you'll like it.
Yeah, you'll get your fried Oreo outside. That's Shut up, and the guy next to you. Just drove in from Lawton. He's got 14 beers in him and he smells. And you got to pretend it's okay and you don't want to fight because, yeah. Anyway.
I got lost, by the way. My first Texas-Oklahoma game was a while. It was maybe three. It might have been the year before COVID. So it might have been 2019. And I got lost in the fair. Like it was like a maze and I got lost in the fair. I was running into the fried Oreo stand and the corn dog stand and the try to hit the person and drop them in the water thing, and I didn't know where I was. Could see the stadium, it was right there, but I couldn't get out of the damn fair.
Couldn't find it. Yeah. We will play Would You Eat It, Texas State Fair, our annual Would You Eat It
tradition.
We'll play that this week also. I believe we have avoided a government shutdown. I think they came to some deal. I don't know. I'm not really sure, but it's that word seemed to break that they had come to some government funding shutdown, which normally wouldn't really pertain to us, except there was it was threatening Fat Bear Week.
Yeah.
Up at the Fat Bear Week, our traditional Fat Bear Week thing up in Alaska. And so, as I said, we put our full political power into getting this deal done, and I think we really helped.
I think the pod we helped was instrumental
keeping the government going because we got to have Fat Bear Week, Otis 747, the whole thing. We got to have it. So we're going to get there. All right. One other Big 12 note, West Virginia is 4-1. And Pat, you brought this up numerous times. Neil Brown of the Mountaineers said, don't pick us last. You guys are idiots. Yeah. You guys picked us last. Yeah. We're not coming in last. They go down to TCU in 24-21. It was an excellent game.
Yeah.
They've only lost at Penn State. That was a lopsided score, but I've been terrible on my picks this year. And I'd like to offer an apology to Purdue. I thought Illinois would beat you. I could not have been more wrong. I'm going to do better on my picks. I apologize to Purdue. I apologize because they're way the hell better than Illinois. It was a stupid pick, and I was all wrong. I'm even for a week going to say Lafayette's a big enough city that you actually have a West. You
have
a West Lafayette. That's how humiliated, humbled, just begging for help. I'm begging for forgiveness. Anyway, West Virginia is 4-1. I was right that they didn't look that bad against Penn State. They got beat. soundly on the scoreboard, but there's something here. Good for the Mountaineers.
Absolutely. I mean, Neil Brown came into the season on the hottest seat in the country.
Yeah.
And he's not just surviving, he's thriving at this point. I mean, they've had big 12 wins now over Texas Tech and TCU. And this one, I mean, like, they did everything to win. Like, they blocked two field goals, including one right there at the end to save the game. And that, you know, they've been doing it. They've played two quarterbacks. Garrett Green's been hurt. And Garrett Green's just kind of like a chewing gum and baling wire. He's a tough player out there. He doesn't throw all that well, but he'll run do some running for you. And their defense is good. They're piecing it together. They're playing complementary football, the old saying. And they've got Houston, Oklahoma State, UCF coming up. I mean, why can't they go on a streak here? Why can't they be this year's, maybe not TCU and go to the playoff, but they could end up being a factor in the Big 12 race?
Yeah, you look at the stats and you wonder how they are winning. It's amazing, and I think it's just they've played really good timely defense, and as Pat said, gotten some key, you know, special teams plays. They sacked TCU five times, and they kind of just controlled the ball with Donaldson, CJ Donaldson, who's a stud, but he only had like 66 yards, I think, in that TCU game on 22 carries. But they control the ball, and they're kind of playing like, they're really kind of playing old school football, and that's what they have to do, you know, because they're not very explosive offensively. I mean, they were outgained by TCU. TCU had more first downs. It's wild how they're winning game, but they're winning games, but they're putting it together, man. And they've got a pretty dang good resume, and they beat Pitt, Texas Tech, and TCU, and yeah, they could be favored probably, and they'll probably be favored, like Pat mentioned, their next two, maybe three games. And, you know, the biggest one obviously is on November 11th. They play at Oklahoma.
Well, they're drinking that beer, you know that. So things are on the up.
They're drinking their beer. They're riding that scooter around, you know, the personal transit mover person.
Oh, the transit mover. Things are going wild up there. I know Ross has got to go to this wedding brunch in a minute, but I want your thoughts on this. The ongoing saga, we have a massive development in one of our ongoing sagas. If you recall, there was this oddball tweet out by that Najee Harris once told a guy, Eric Bossy, I believe, who's a basketball recruiting guy. He sent out this tweet saying Najee Harris once told him that Jim Mora Jr. knew who killed Tupac Shakur. Okay, this was the most weird out of nowhere. Naturally, we went with it. Naturally, we dug in that Jim Mora Jr. knew who killed Tupac Shakur. So this fall, we've had some developments. There was a raiding of a house, and then finally we had an arrest. And a lot of alert readers, listeners, are noting that UConn's 0-5. Maybe Jim Mora Jr. is distracted on this. Did he know what's going on, the whole thing? Jim Mora Jr. has denied it and sounded baffled at the entire suggestion. What is Najee Harris doing? I don't know. We don't know, but we know this. There was an arrest. There was an arrest. Dwayne Keith Davis, and I love that when the media does this, Dwayne Keith Davis, known as Keefy D.
Yeah.
Like, okay, like,
known by Phillips.
Like, nobody, yeah, like, oh, I'm, oh, I never heard of Dwayne. Oh, yes, Keefy D, my intricate knowledge of the 2000s Southside Crips. Yes, of course, Keefy D. Like, why do you put a street name in there? Who knows this? It's not like it's a well-known nickname, right? Like, I don't know, Bum Phillips or something like that. I didn't even think of some of these guys. Anyway, Keefy D has been arrested for the involvement in the murder. And here's the thing. This guy and his nephew, he's blaming on his nephew, who actually is dead now, for shooting Tupac on the Las Vegas Strip. Keefy D, everyone knew Keefy D did it because Keefy D previously apparently confessed to the Vegas police but wasn't arrested. I'm not sure how this all worked. Wrote a book where he discusses his involvement and has done documentaries and podcasts discussing his involvement. So the question isn't that Jim Mora Jr. knew, it's how wouldn't he have known? I'm ashamed that I didn't know. Keefe D is out here telling everyone he did it.
Glad the cops only took 25 years to connect these dots, given what they were told by Keefe D.
Ross Dellinger, not, I've never murdered anyone. I assume you've never murdered anyone.
No,
if
no.
I did, would you write a book about how you were involved in it? I would shut up.
I would probably not do that. Yeah, that would want to be the last things that I would do is write a book about the crime that I committed. But, you know, some of these people, man, they just they want to be part of them wants to be famous. Part of them wants people to know that they were involved in some way. And that's what we have here, I think.
Well, I do think it's absolutely clear that this had been weighing on Jim Mora, and that's part of why they'd gotten off to such a terrible start. They were 0-4, and it was a bad 0-4. And so then all this breaks. I think it was Friday, right? Was it Friday that all this breaks?
Yeah.
Well, lo and behold, UConn plays its best game of the year. They actually led Utah State most of the game, and they lose by 1 point.
Blocked PAT. They were about to tie it.
An unburdened Jim Mora coached that game.
I see big things for UConn ahead. I agree.
Yeah. I think they could tear off a bunch of wins now.
So the interesting part is we'll see where the story develops. I'm now down. I'm really fascinated by this whole Keefe D situation. Like, you could be like, hey, it was a false confession. The cops pressured me, or I let it slip once I was talking to a guy. You wrote a book?
You're appearing on a podcast.
I said something I didn't mean. No, you wrote a book. Okay, there's processes, editing. Like, you sure you want to mention that, Keefe? Anyway, so part of the thing may involve P. Diddy Combs ordering the hit. Mm. And Diddy Combs' son did play for UCLA under Jim. So there's a lot more here. Just the ongoing saga is continuing. And I'm all in on this.
We're just getting going.
Yeah. All right, Ross, you got to go. Don't anger the bride. Wish us congratulations and tell them that. Come on, fall wedding. Come on.
I know. Come. It is what it is. Whatever.
Yeah, that's all right. Good for that.
Poor form.
We wish the happy couple much success.
Yep,
much success.
We wish Ross sobriety by the Tuesday show.
Yeah, and good job. Yeah. You played hurt today. You played hurt. This is what the College Football Inquirer does for you guys, the listeners. This is how dedicated we are.
That's right.
No other podcast could survive a New Orleans wedding and get up and do this thing.
Barely survive.
Grit.
I'm hanging on.
Hashtag grit. Rise and grind.
That's right.
We got culture here. We have culture.
All right, you'll be good.
Yeah, you kick off. Brian Ferentz watch. They won 26-16 over Michigan State. They now have 111 points, only 95 of them scored by the offense.
But
he's averaging 22.2, and he needs 27 for the remainder of the season. So they decent effort against Michigan State, but they won.
Yeah, they won the game. This is what they do. And Cooper DeJean really actually remains their best offensive player, even though he plays defense and special teams. Had a 70-yard punt return, I believe, in that game. So the best part of that contract for Brian is that he gets the defensive and special teams points count on his side. So we'll see. They got Purdue coming up. I could see him getting back over the Mendoza line against Purdue. Then Wisconsin, Minnesota.
Don't say anything bad about Purdue. Watch yourself. I have been proven wrong.
Purdue so far is that team that, like, you can't predict. I mean, they're gonna lose games you think they're gonna win. They're gonna win games you think they're gonna lose.
They laid it on Illinois. That was one of my worst picks I've ever had.
We've had one of my worst picks. I picked Syracuse as my lock of the week against Clemson. That was never gonna happen. Never. Terrible.
So what do you think? What do you think of what that mean? Look, Syracuse got a 4-0. They were looking okay, but this was the test. They didn't handle the test. How good is Clemson? Does it restore any faith or not? Or what is this?
Not really. I mean, all I know is this. if you view Clemson through the prism of recent past, where you expect them to be in competition for a college football playoff bid and or the national championship, no. I mean, that ship has sailed for this season. Now, could you still end up winning the ACC? I don't know. I mean, they need some help to even get into the ACC championship game at this point. But you look at it, they've got a big, big game in Coral Gables against a right now undefeated Miami team on October 21. And then they also have Notre Dame, and they've got North Carolina later. So they've got some big games remaining. I don't know. I will give them credit. That's a good bounce-back authoritative win coming off of Florida State in a place where they historically have struggled in the dome there. So it's a good win for Clemson. Doesn't really necessarily change my opinion of them.
Penn State remains undefeated. They're 5-0. They beat Northwestern 41-13, but it was not what the score looked like. It was 10-10 at half. Penn State needed a touchdown just to get to 10-10 at half. They averaged 4.8 yards per play against Northwestern. The one thing is that they have a good defense. Penn State's got a good defense. They got some running backs. They got a whole slew of running backs. Just 12 plays this year of over 20 yards. Drew Aller's got to do better. They get UMass and a bye before the big Ohio State game. Can they get this offense fixed? I don't see them running the gauntlet of Ohio State and Michigan if this is going to be their offense where they're struggling against Northwestern in first half situations.
I agree. I mean, they have not been able to produce many explosive plays. And usually in those games, you do need to, because it's just too hard to go up and down the field. So you've got to be able to, you know, break open a defense now and again, and that's a problem. But boy, the schedule sets up nice for them to figure it out. Open date, get in the lab, as the players say, and work on what's not working. And then UMass, same thing. And then you go to Ohio State on October 21st. So to get 2 weeks at this point in the season to really work on yourself is a pretty nice luxury, I think. And on the flip side, Ohio State doesn't have that. They did have the open date this week, but they got Maryland, who's undefeated. Yeah. I mean, that's not going to be a cakewalk. So the schedule sets up well for Penn State going into Columbus, but that's a few weeks down the road.
All right. We've said a lot of mean things on this pod, as we tend to do. Can we say something nice? Sean, you want to jump in on say something nice? You can take Ross's spot.
There we go.
Do you have anything nice to say? You can take a moment. I'll let Pat go first and me, but let's have, I'm sure he's a nice guy. Sean's a nice guy.
Nothing nice to say about the Atlanta Falcons right now.
Oh, okay. Is that going on? All right. Yeah. All right. All right. Well, you think of something nice college football wise. Pat, you have something nice to say to anybody?
I do.
All right, go ahead.
The state of Kentucky, a football state. Do you remember when John Calipari ticked off Mark Stoops by saying they were a basketball school and all that? Blah, 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 blah. Hey, Kentucky is 5-0. Louisville is 5-0. The last time those two things happened at the same time? Never. It has never happened in the history of the state. So kudos to both schools. Louisville obviously made the big hire of Jeff Brohm, and then he worked the portal expertly and improved the roster. And Mark Stoops also worked the portal expertly and improved his roster and sets up two huge games for the Kentucky schools this week. Notre Dame comes to Louisville. That's going to be a rocking atmosphere. And Kentucky goes to Georgia between the hedges. And that's going to be a rocking atmosphere. But Georgia better be ready, as I said earlier in the podcast, because Kentucky is not going to go meekly in that game at all. And what we've seen from Georgia ain't been that impressive.
All right, I'm going to say something nice about Jim Harbaugh.
There you go.
He is back, obviously, coaching. Michigan finally leaves the big house to play somebody. It was Nebraska, but still, you got to go there. It's a big stadium, all that. They destroyed Nebraska 45-7. No contest, no worries, anything like that. I'm not going to give them too much credit for that. Nebraska's not looking too good, but good victory. Whatever we thought might be a challenge was not. Here is why I'm saying something nice about Jim Harbaugh. During the game, Kenneth Grant, their 6'4", 335-pound defensive lineman, had an interception, and it was a batted ball, and he looked up, tracked this ball, and made a really nice catch, especially for a defensive lineman, like over the shoulder, kind of Willie Mays catch, and catches the ball. And it's an interception in the middle of this game. After the game, apparently in the post-game locker room, Harbaugh sides. He's so excited about Kenneth Grant. This is his quote. "It just came over me that we ought to sing for he's a jolly good fellow." What? "For he's a jolly good fellow" to Kenneth Grant for that amazing play that he made.
Oh my God.
It's so the weird. First time I've ever asked a team to sing for he's a jolly good fellow. It just came over us. The guys liked it. I think it's a keeper.
Oh no. Oh,
Coach Prime has a DJ in the locker room, and Jim Harbaugh is getting these 19, 20, 22, whatever, to sing for he's a jolly good fellow, which was a hokey ass song whenever the hell it was recorded. Now, Jim Harbaugh once did all this. Remember, he had signing with the Stars, and he's done all that stuff too. But who else would think for he's a jolly good fellow? Let's sing it and then get the guys to do it. I can't wait for the video of this. It's got to be the most cringeworthy thing ever. God bless you, Jim Harbaugh. Never change. Never change.
I'm looking. The tune is of French origin and dates to at least the 18th century. When it was actually put to use for this little ditty.
So the 1700s. Yeah. 300-year-old song.
It was sung in a 1934 film. It's played at the end of Mr. Deeds, 1936. It's sung in Gone with the Wind. I'm out with that.
Has anyone ever liked this song?
No. Like,
it's a bad song.
It's a bad song.
But hey, you make that. I mean, it's well-meaning. It's nice. You're a jolly good fellow. A jolly good fellow.
By the mid-19th century, it was being sung with the words for he's a jolly good fellow. So often at all male social gatherings.
I was tipped off to this story by Jason Baranowski of DIAG, the DIAG company there.
DIAG, man. DIAG.
DIAG. DIAG. I'm only kidding. I was joking with it. The DIAG Custom Staffing Solutions. He clued me into that. All right. Sean, you got anything nice to say?
Yeah, I'll say something pretty genuinely nice about Oregon State bouncing back, taking down Utah. It was just a huge win. And I know Utah didn't have Cam Rising, but they didn't have Cam Rising for the first four games, and they were 4-0. And Oregon State, if they wanted to stay competitive in the Pac-12, they just took a brutal loss to Washington State, and all they needed was DJU to protect the ball, play some defense, and try to move it down the field, and that's what they did. And the Pac-12 is as fun of a conference that I've seen. It's every game is must-see TV. So Oregon State, thank you for giving us something fun after the tough Big Ten slates and ACC slates throughout the season. So thank you, Oregon State.
All right, good job.
Good one. Good one.
Good job. Good job. Except Ross, hot seat. Ross might be hot seat.
Yeah, right. Ross is in trouble.
Small sample. I did it again. I'm supposed to do small sample. See, this is the second time. Second week in a row. I'm out of sorts. My picks are out of sorts on this. Anyway, we usually give the Heisman to the end of the year. People do. We give it every week. Small sample Heisman. Pat, who won your small sample Heisman this week?
I am going with Talia Tungavailoa. Yeah. Tua's little brother, and Tua's tearing up the NFL, but Talia is tearing up the Big Ten right now. Just absolutely shredded Indiana on Saturday. 352 passing yards, 5 touchdowns, no interceptions. His passer rating, 206, which was the second highest of his career. The only one higher was last year against Charlotte, so that doesn't count. This certainly counts. Terps are hot. They're 5-0 and a pretty dominant 5-0. Their closest game so far has been 18 points. So look out, Ohio State. Better be ready next Saturday. I imagine they will be. But still, I don't know who was the fourth best men's tennis player in the world when Federer, Nadal, and Djokovic were all, you know, at the top of their games. But that's kind of how Maryland might feel right now. You're the fourth best team in a loaded division with Penn State, Ohio State, and Michigan. But that doesn't mean you have to be an easy out. And so let's keep an eye on the Terps here.
I am going to give my small sample Heisman to Brady Cook, the quarterback from Missouri. They rolled Vanderbilt Saturday, but they are 5-0. He has, for the season, 11 touchdowns, no interceptions. He's completing almost 75% of his passes. The junior has been terrific. Went for 395 and four TDs on Saturday. Per ESPN, he has now thrown 348 straight passes without an interception. And that is an SEC record. Missouri is, they're sneaking along here. Who knows? Yeah, they got that win over K-State. Will they be a factor in this SEC race or not? We're going to find out. But
LSU coming to Faurot Field next week.
LSU coming, reeling. They can't guard anyone. They can't cover anyone. Here's Brady Cook. Brady Cook could become a big name real quickly, but no bigger honor than winning my small sample Heisman. So keep throwing it to your guys and not the other ones, Brady. That'd be my advice to you. Sean, small sample Heisman?
Yeah, really liked Pat's Talia pick, but I had a backup ready.
All right.
Has to go to Quinshon Judkins from Ole Miss. Yeah. I just, when you needed him the most in the fourth quarter, he was there. When he had the ball, he was an effective runner. 33 carries, 177 yards, a rushing touchdown, and a receiving touchdown. He's the guy that they go to, and he had a huge, huge impact in this win over LSU, making them look silly. He also had some excellent touchdown celebrations in the end zone, classic dance moves. Really got me fired up on my end. So big fan of Judkins and what he did on Saturday night.
Awesome. All right, that is our show. Huge week ahead. We'll be back Tuesday to discuss all the details coming up. Everyone's excited for an excellent week. Last week, it's been a great season so far. We are in October. Happy October. Things are rolling here on this podcast. We appreciate every single one of you for listening, especially those of you that listen an hour into it. It's quite humbling, and I'll tell you, it's why a guy like is at a wedding all night with his best friend and is still willing to get up and do it. So we appreciate right. Ross, but yep. We really love this podcast. We love all of the interaction and all the people that listen. You are greatly appreciated. We understand there's a lot of choices, so we have fun with it. But we'll be back, and it's gonna be a great week for us. So continue to share us on social media, tell your friends about us, subscribe, leave nice reviews and things like that. And we will talk to you later.